Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we are going to be talking about Tesla's expansion plans in Germany. We've also got updates on Tesla in China, Tesla Energy. We've got a couple of big pieces of news on Twitter, which will have implications for Tesla, news on Starlink, the Boring Company, and a couple other items as well. All right, well, what to say about the market today? It can be a fickle beast. The NASDAQ today finishing down 5%, Tesla down 8.3%, closing at $873.28. So about an $80 drop in the share price, but basically just taking the stock back to where it was on Friday. So the volatility continues. CNBC didn't even really have an explanation for the drop today, which is a rarity from them. And I also had to laugh a little bit at this article from Yahoo Finance with the headline of "Why the Stock Market is Getting Thrashed After Rallying on Fed Hike." And they say that, quote, "It now appears that after a few hours of deep thought, traders have formed a more lasting near-term view that the Fed is far from dovish, has let inflation get out of control, and is still poised to dramatically slow down the economy through a series of 50 basis point rate increases," end quote. So nothing new in there, other than, as they say, a few hours of deep thought. At any rate, the NASDAQ did hit new 52-week lows today and closed at the lowest price in the last year as well. This is yet another worst performance in the last 18 months, and if it sounds like I'm being repetitive with saying that, it's because I've said that three times in the last couple of weeks. In fact, if we look at the worst performances for the NASDAQ over the last 2 years, in the last eight trading days, we have had three of the top six worst days for the NASDAQ during that period. Thankfully, there have been a couple of up days mixed in there as well, but still a really, really tough couple of weeks here. That last 2 years measure, that does cut off the significant drops from March of 2020. Those were COVID-related. But if we widen that out and look over the last 5 years, these 3 days all in the top 15 worst days for the NASDAQ. So it is a crazy period of time, and regardless of what's going on with Tesla, it's going to continue to be impacted by these factors. Sometimes in the market, you just gotta be patient, you gotta wait through periods of time like this, and they often serve as good opportunities for steady accumulation. All right, getting into Tesla-specific news here, we've got a pretty exciting update out of Germany, with RBB24 reporting that they have found out from official circles that Tesla intends to purchase approximately 100 hectares of land located directly east of their land for Giga Berlin. And to convert that over to acres, that'd be about 250 acres, and it'd be about a 33% expansion in terms of land area there for Tesla. RBB's graphic here shows that new area in red. RBB doesn't say exactly what the intended use of this land would be for Tesla, but after all the delays in getting Giga Berlin open, I think it's encouraging to see the interest, at least from Tesla, in continuing to expand here. We know that Elon Musk had mentioned that at the factory opening, but that's not as significant as a commitment as a land purchase would be. And Elon's comments probably could have just been satisfied on the current footprint. Anyway, this article does continue on and tends to feel quite familiar to the opening process for Giga Berlin. They say that, quote, "In order for Tesla to be able to build on the site, the Grünheide Municipal Council must also have the development plan for the site changed. Tesla wants to propose to the community representatives to take the first steps in June. In the procedure, all authorities involved must agree to the change. The Water Association, Strausberg Erkner, which is critical of new construction projects due to the lack of water in the region, has to waive the plan through," end quote. So all too familiar, but obviously this would be a very similar process that Tesla went through before. Hopefully they've learned some things in that process. Certainly Tesla caused some delays in that process, particularly with their battery factory plans. And on the other side, some of the approvals had to be redone, and that cost quite a few weeks. So definitely some potential there for things to go a little bit more smoothly. But RBB does also note that citizens and associations can send in questions and comments, and they say that because this isn't a high water production area, a lot of discussion could arise, and they say that overall it should be at least June 2023 before Tesla can start construction. And of course, going all the way back to the very early days of Giga Berlin, there is forest on this site, so like the first time around, if Tesla does clear that, they'll have to replant trees elsewhere, which I think they would end up doing anyway. So it might be a lengthy process, but no better time to start working through that than right now. Hopefully soon we can start talking about how the potential output for Tesla there at Giga Berlin is underappreciated, the same way that we're talking about Giga Shanghai, which, by the way, it's been, what, 2 days since we talked about Giga Shanghai expansion, and here we're already talking about Giga Berlin expansion. People are going to continue to underestimate the growth that Tesla is shooting for. Anyway, speaking of China, we do have a small update on Giga Shanghai here, well, possibly a small update. The possible update coming from an article out of China, which is reporting on comments made yesterday by the deputy secretary of the Lingang New Area Management Committee during a press briefing. So this gave a lot of information about the number of companies in the area that had restarted production as of May 3rd, but then it goes on to say that on April 18th, SAIC Motors Lingang passenger vehicle plant launched a stress test for resumption of work and production. On April 19th, Tesla's Shanghai plant officially resumed work and production with 8,000 employees on duty and a daily output of about 1,200 vehicles. So again, here we're left with a little bit of confusion. Is this number coming from the deputy secretary? Is this being added for context by the reporter? Are they saying that production was 1,200 per day on April 19th when it reopened? Are they saying that that was from when this update was on May 3rd? I don't think any of those are clear enough to be able to draw a conclusion from, and this number doesn't necessarily tie up with another report that we have heard. Because of that, I'm not sure there's a lot we can take away from this, but I suppose if we were to take the most bearish interpretation of that, it would suggest at least 1,200 per day as of May 3rd, so that would mean that Tesla is at least at slightly above 50% capacity. We'll get a little bit more insight on this soon when we get the China Passenger Car Association numbers for April. That should be sometime early next week. All right, next we've just got a really quick update on Tesla Energy. As we have talked about before, PG&E and Tesla recently opened up the 730 megawatt hour Moss Landing substation. Tesla, as they have done with a few other energy storage projects, just released a quick video highlighting this achievement, so always nice to see those. Although I will say that the recent video of the Alaskan Megapack project that we had talked about probably edges it out a little bit on cinematography or visual appeal, but hey, this project is 20 times larger. Next up, we've got a couple of pretty significant updates on Elon Musk's attempt to acquire Twitter. Both of these could have an influence on Tesla. The first here has to do with financing. So Elon filed an updated 13D today, and it discloses a significant number of new financing commitments for the acquisition offer. So this is a total of $7.14 billion committed from 18 different entities, which we can see in this filing. A couple of noteworthy ones in here. You've got $1 billion from Larry Ellison. You've got $100 million from Ron Barron. And then perhaps the most intriguing name on this list is $500 million from Binance, which is, of course, the largest crypto exchange in the world. I think you'd have to assume that for them to be on board, there probably would have had to have been some conversations with Elon about his plans for possible crypto integration with Twitter. So interesting to see that. And then the filing also notes that Saudi billionaire of Kingdom Holdings will be rolling over 35 million shares of Twitter into this merger. That'd be just shy of $2 billion worth at the offer price. So across these entities, that's about $9 billion in commitments for this offer. And that may not be all. The filing also says that the reporting person, Elon, is seeking and may receive additional financing commitments, possibly including existing shareholders, and the filing specifically calls out Jack Dorsey as one of those possible inclusions. So all of this lightens the capital commitment required from Elon, and even though this is only $9 billion, and we know the equity financing was structured to be $21 billion, Elon has adjusted the financing structure here, and the margin loan commitment has been reduced from $12.5 billion down to $6.25 billion. So I'm happy to see that. Tesla investors should be happy to see that. That greatly reduces the risk of any margin call to the point where really it shouldn't be a concern at all. And I'm also pretty happy that we discussed that as a possibility when Elon sold Tesla stock, because really didn't see that mentioned out there anywhere else. Most people were assuming that Elon was having to sell to cover that equity financing. But depending on the taxes that Elon ends up paying on those sales, the margin loan was reduced by a pretty similar amount to what Elon ended up selling in Tesla stock. The other update on Twitter is from CNBC, which is reporting that sources have told them that, quote, Elon Musk is expected to serve as a temporary CEO of Twitter for a few months after he completes his $44 billion takeover of the social media company, end quote. So that's just saying that sources expect that. That doesn't necessarily mean that that has been communicated by Elon, though I do think that that is likely. It also does say temporary, but I think we're all aware that that could turn into a longer appointment. So I think it's fair for Tesla investors to not really be thrilled about that, but at the same time, Elon's going to do what he's going to do. If we heard today that Elon was going to start being CEO of SpaceX, and he hadn't been yet, people would probably think that's insane and impossible, and that would be a relatively fair opinion, I think, but we've seen Elon do it. Sure, there's concern about where does he eventually cross that threshold, but I think no one understands that better than Elon, so it's tough to be too critical of that from the outside. I think it's totally fair to have some concern around that, but at the same time, I think Elon has earned that respect. All right, moving on from Twitter, we've got a couple updates here on Starlink and The Boring Company. First on Starlink, they've added a new plan option for $25 a month called Portability. SpaceX says that this feature, quote, enables users to temporarily move their Starlink to new locations in order to receive service anywhere within the same continent Starlink provides active coverage, end quote. Then they also note that portable users are served on a best effort basis and should expect lower service levels than fixed users. So as I said, this is $25 a month. You can turn it on and off whenever you want, but there is no proration, and that month is associated with your billing cycle rather than when you happen to turn it on. I think this is a good win-win, definitely a nice feature for customers to have, and then should generate some solid revenue and additional profit for SpaceX. And I think it appears to be a bit of a stepping stone. SpaceX says that, quote, we do not support Starlink use in motion at this time. Using Starlink kit in motion will void the limited warranty of your kit. While our teams are actively working to make it possible to use Starlink on moving vehicles, e.g. automobiles, RVs, boats, Starlink is not yet configured to be safely used in this way, end quote. So clearly that is a part of the development roadmap. We've already talked about Hawaiian Airlines using Starlink. It's just really fun and exciting to watch this develop over the years. Similarly, we've got an update on The Boring Company. The Austin Business Journal is reporting that The Boring Company has made some initial progress on a possible tunnel in the Austin area. They say that the Kyle City Council has approved a $50,000 professional services agreement for The Boring Company to begin engineering work for a potential pedestrian tunnel. So Kyle, Texas is about 20 miles south of Austin, but I'm sure having a project in that area would have some influence on Austin as well. Later on, I'm sure there would be potential to connect. All right, last item for today is just a quick update on Lucid. They did report their quarterly earnings after market close today. They reported revenue of $57.7 million on deliveries of 360 vehicles to customers in the first quarter. Despite only that few hundred deliveries, they are still saying that their production guidance for this year is 12,000 to 14,000 vehicles. Lucid also announced that they will be raising prices for new reservations as of June 1st, with the Lucid Air Grand Touring costing then $154,000 and the Lucid Air Pure at $87,400. Across the board, those will represent $15,000 to $10,000 price increases and about 11 to 13%. The other thing I was kind of curious to take a quick look at was their operating expenses. So between SG&A and research and development, they spent about $400 million in the first quarter. Still quite a lot, but looks a lot better in comparison to Rivian, which has put up numbers there greater than $1 billion, even excluding some factors. All right, that is really it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, May 6th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.